That's Yusuf Lateef opening his own composition, Minor Mood, from his 1957 album, Other Sounds. Lateef is on tenor sax, flute, and argul, a traditional Arabic woodwind instrument, Wilbur Hardin on flugelhorn, Hugh Lawson on piano, Ernie Farrow on bass, and Oliver Jackson on drums. Yusuf Lateef was a multi-instrumentalist, composer, band leader, author, and educator, and began his career in jazz in Detroit, performing as a young artist with some of the local greats. In 1950, he began his studies in composition and flute at Wayne State University. He converted to Islam and became a prominent member of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. He died in Shutesbury, Massachusetts, on December the 23rd, 2013, at the age of 93. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And I want to talk today about madness normalized. How we seem to be adapting very well to life in the age of psychopolitics. And that alone tells us that it in fact is real. Real enough to constitute a headline. So, what's most noteworthy about President Donald Trump's first 100 days in office is how the president has normalized what not too long ago we would have called madness, and how, as a nation, we seem to be adapting well to life in the age of psychopolitics. Now, you read all of the headlines. You just need to read headlines. That's what I do these days. Before I decide to get deep into an article, I look at the headline to see whether it's worth my while to dive in. And most often, the answer is no, it's not worth my while to dive in. Because I am satisfied, maybe a bit egotistical to say, but I am satisfied that the nation has gone mad. And the more the time goes on, you see how well the structures that used to resist are accepting the madness and working with the madness and accommodating the madness. So then a person like me would now have to redefine madness, because madness is now normal. And we have to do this in order to remind ourselves that we actually are not mad. We're not mad, but we have to be ever alert about the many ways in which we can be dragged along with and inserted into this new culture. It's established. It's the culture of madness, chaos. And we are soon going to be measured by the degree to which we can tolerate well increasing levels of madness and chaos and still go on with our so-called lives. Let me give you an example. In fact, this is the thing that took this whole conversation that I was having with myself. I was actually asking myself, I'm not kidding you. I was asking myself and questioning myself about my own sanity. Because for the past 2 days or so, there's been an incredible, a surfeit of coverage, as they call it, or they like to call it, about Donald Trump's tax plan. And all the different, I mean, the hullabaloo about it. And the fighting that's going on and the posturing about this tax plan and what it would mean. And, you know, to the point where you see the coverage serving. I mean, if you look clearly, you see that the coverage starts picking up a particular pace and a particular tone. And it's all about getting the people very, very concerned and even upset. And they're talking about all these different angles of the tax plan. And I had to check myself. I actually went for a walk. I walked carefully so I wouldn't fall again. But I said, maybe it's me. For the life of me, I can't understand how this tax plan has gotten legitimacy, has all these experts being dragged onto the screens of the televisions to argue back and forth about the legitimacy and the planks of the tax plan and how it would work and how it would affect different sectors of our society and all of this stuff. Okay. I'm still trying to figure out. I double-checked and triple-checked. But I came up with the idea that I'm okay. My brain is okay. I am sane. My brain is okay. It's still in decent working order. I can't vouch for it 5 years from now, but for right now, it's doing its job. We're okay in the brain department, brain functioning department. And then it caused another concern, and that is, how is it possible that I feel so alone in this view? I feel so alone in the way I'm looking at the issue of Trump's much vaunted tax plan. I kept searching in my head for some reasonable explanation why the press corps, if you will, has lost its mind. And the bulk of the people in Washington, D.C. appear to have joined that club. They're all crazy. And with great authority, they are imposing their craziness on the rest of us. Now, I got a bit more specific. This plan, this hallowed plan coming out of the head of President Chaos is exactly one page. One page. Okay. The president's great mind, and mind you, this is backed up by all the other great minds he has around him, produced exactly one page as the tax plan. And everybody's scurrying around talking about the details of this plan. What would it do? How would it affect people over here? How would it affect people over there? It is one page. And with all of this bacchanal going on in Washington, D.C., and the frothing over this as if this is a legitimate thing, as if this is a respectable thing, one page he produces just about on the 100th day, on the 100th day, Trump's tax plan was born. Now, just so you know, the actual tax plan that exists now, the tax code of the United States, exceeds 70,000 pages. And no accountant yet has been able to admit that he or she has mastered the tax code of the United States. 70,000 pages. And people have been using this thing of 70,000 pages only to use it as sometimes as a doorstop, but as a general point of reference when they're ready to go to court and argue over tax issues. That's what the tax code is for. That's what it has been used for these many years. Everybody admits it's time to take on the task of fixing this tax code because it is just way too cumbersome, too onerous, too obscure, too crazy for normal people. But they've not had the courage or the strength, even the physical strength, to just begin that process of getting the tax code revised. This, to be sure, would involve tax experts sitting down over, endless cups of coffee, I should say, and a lot of legwork, a lot of stuff. Because, as you know, the tax codes, this has been the legend of the tax codes have been written simply to protect the rich and powerful. When it comes to how the tax codes apply to you and me, everybody's clear. Just pay up and shut up. Pay up and shut up. That's the tax code as it applies to us. Now, Trump has come in talking about the evil tax codes because that's where he finds great resonance with his political base. Apart from cleaning or draining the swamp, the tax codes, he kind of portrays, would go along with that. So they, yeah. But you tell me, how is it possible that people, I'm talking about educated people, people with all kinds of degrees, journalists with all kinds of experience covering the White House and covering Congress, and nobody yet has said, how the heck do you come up with a one-page thing? You call it a plan, and then we have to take it up from there. That's what they've done. It is such a tremendous insult to anybody with a ticking brain that this is where we have come and this is what the president This is what the president is operating with as his intellectual ammunition. And the tax, the great tax reform that he has just submitted that is getting everybody in a frenzy, literally and primarily has to do with him and people like him, the wealthy. And it is amazing to see how the psyche of the nation has been so manipulated that nobody's asking questions. Because Trump put in place the PSYOPs version of his plan, has some mindless people in the media who used to be journalists. They would ask these kinds of questions. Do you really believe that this one-page thing that you have submitted here to the nation should be taken seriously? Do you not understand what kind of insult you have hurled at the nation as a whole that makes the nation look stupid? We look stupid. From 70,000 pages plus, you come up with your plan, which is one page. And we are supposed to accept that this is the result of a great deal of discussion, introspection, consultation, and so forth. No, it's just that, hey, this is what I want. This is going to allow me to make a ton of money so I could cut corporate taxes. I'm the president. I could do whatever I want to do. So I'm cutting corporate taxes. And yeah, I'll cut other people's taxes too. You'll get something for you. We give you something. But the main thing is it's so clear that it's this idea of his that this is tax reform. Tax reform is to give me, that's the first idea, give me and my businesses what I want and what I need to make more money. By extension, the oligarchy of America, the people who are wealthy, would be jumping for joy. And this would make up for all the other stupid things that you have done so far. We like the idea that you're helping us make money. You're cutting our taxes. So we'll forgive the other atrocities that you have committed. You bought us off. We like you. And along with this clear pandering to America's wealthy and corporate sector, your latest move of becoming the world's greatest warmongerer, we like that too. We like that. So Trump, in one page so-called reformation, has managed to recruit a sycophantic press, or just say sick for short. It's a sick press. And they, in turn, are selling the nation that this is yet another manifestation of the greatness of Donald Trump. Look, he condensed all that stuff, all that gibberish in those 70,000 plus pages, and he came up with a one-page answer, a one-page solution. This guy knows what he's doing. And maybe we ought to give him a lot more credibility, a lot more room to continue to bless us with his intellectual power and his foresight and his capacity to govern. I mean, I didn't sleep. I said, this is not happening. This can't be real. That we have this atrocity occurring. And by the way, nobody has yet truly analyzed, you know, they talked about it here and there, or they made it so that we would think that they're discussing this great tax plan. But there's a very basic question. Is this a plan? This is what you call a plan? Where is the rationale for your plan? Show us what you think will be the likely upsides and the likely downsides. How is this plan to be implemented? Who is going to be affected and how? How does your brilliant one-page plan upstage that cumbersome 70,000-plus page plan that we've been operating with for so long? How does it differ? You mean to tell me all these years, all these accountants, all these economics experts have been trying to manage this thing called the U.S. tax code, but they're so stupid. They are so inexperienced that what they've come up with, you might as well throw it through the window. Now, that may very well be a valid point of view, but somebody ought to call upon the president to prove it. Prove, at least in theory. Let's put your thing to the test. Which panel of experts did you consult? Which members of Congress did you bring into this conversation, considering that it is Congress, not you, that has the power over these kinds of things, levying taxes and so forth? But we haven't heard any member of Congress saying, thank you so much, President Trump, for reaching out to us for our input. Or we haven't heard a brisk discussion between academicians who differ on plank A or plank B. And at the same time, he's announcing this brilliant, I mean, I think it was meant to be a slap in the face, a kind of private joke, that you guys, meaning the rest of the nation, you've been wrestling with a problem, and I'm a man of action, and I could solve things. But look what he's done. And nobody yet, nobody, I've been watching, I've been listening, I've been reading, there's no a swelling of discontent about this whole process, let alone about the product. Donald Trump, it seemed, probably when he was in, you know, on the toilet and needed something to do, began scribbling some ideas, and boom, there we go, we have a solution. That's the level of governance we have right now. That's our top guy. During the week, he also convened, made no sense at all. He calls the members of the U.S. Senate to the White House. He summons them. I don't have to come to you. You come to me. Well, a couple of them didn't go. And good thing, we can't say they all went, but almost all of them went. They got loaded up on buses and taken from the Senate over to the White House. Okay. What's the purpose of this meeting? Apart from, you know, getting people excited and the media to get the, you know, the to document this mass movement of legislators from the U.S. Senate to the White House, because the president is so disrespectful, so loathsome, that he made a new rule. I want to talk to you, so you come to me. Okay, what does he want to talk about, you think? The president wants to talk about North Korea and the current state of affairs. Well, okay. That's a good thing. I like it when people talk. However, this discussion is happening at a White House that the president himself doesn't trust to be safe. He's talking, this is classified information. He has all these sheep at the White House, and just for dignity and self-respect, they shouldn't have gone. What was required, if you're going to have a confidential briefing, there are provisions for that in Washington, D.C. Specific rooms where this can occur, that there will be no breach of confidentiality. But no, he calls them over like sheep. They show up. He talks some kind of nonsense to them, and then he lets them go. How about that? Big man shows his power over all these sniveling legislators, too spineless to say, go to hell. This is not how it works. Well, we did have Bernie Sanders saying that he, in explaining why he didn't go, he said he was just not going to be part of a road show, a White House road show, which was what it was. Now, here's the thing that you have to understand. It is not only that this bizarre kind of behavior is occurring and continuing to occur. It is that when you look at the full picture, you see this kind of bizarre behavior occurring and as a backdrop to the United States on the brink of war. And in fact, at war already. Mr. President Chaos has brought us. He's doing this as a show. He's got it on the record. Look at them. They're coming in by the busload. I sent for them and they are responding to me. I have the power here. It's all an ego trip. And we are on the brink of nuclear war, and this bonzo is playing these kinds of games. And again, the media said, nobody's saying, well, what the heck is this? You have something to say to Congress, not to Congress, to the Senate, And you can't find it. You can't find your way to the Senate, to come before the Senate the way any president would, especially if there's a situation so urgent and of such gravity. It's a joke to him. And we haven't had an upsurge in people saying what needs to be said. The president is not supposed to be occupying the highest office in the land. Something's wrong with him. And until he can go someplace, maybe Walter Reed, the psychiatric unit, and they can figure out what's going on with this man's brain, he is to be regarded as a possible impediment, a possible problem. His actions are bizarre. His actions are just totally bizarre. He is operating in a world that only he knows. He has not yet taken lessons in the basics of how you operate as a president, how it works, how it has worked so far. There seems to be nobody who is able to contain him, reel him in, and really sit down and let him know that he's causing all kinds of panic and mayhem, not just in the United States, all over the world. By these stupid actions that he's undertaking and has undertaken, and people just, you know, well, you know, it's just, that's just, there he goes again, you know, that kind of thing. This is, then he's not qualified. And to my utter amazement, we have people who have been elected to represent the interests of the people who act like they have no power. They have no power. They can't do anything but call news conferences and talk. He's really, you know, he really shouldn't do that, bad boy. And but, you know, we're ready whenever he's ready to sit down and talk. No. Lives are on the line here. This is very serious business. And we can't have a clown backed up by a bunch of other clowns who are so terrorized about the prospect of bringing this president into line or getting rid of him. It is clear he's not suited for the job. He's got to go. But nobody wants to say anything. How are you going to do? I'm just citing these two things, and there are many, many more. But they are indicative of a pattern this president has established and set and continues to follow. You're going to show up, not even in elementary school. Do you get to show up with a one-page thing when the teacher asks you to do a nice report with your graphics and your wonderful research? You're going to come in with at least 2 pages to look respectable. This man tells America, I am presenting the tax reform you've been talking about and you've been looking forward to, and here it is. I said, surely this is a problem. This is wrong here. I spent so much time researching, trying to find President Trump's plan, a copy of his plan. But you know, in the beginning, we said early on, this man has no plans. And our job as the citizenry, our job is to go along. Go along with whatever they say government is. If he gets up this morning and he feels like doing A, that's what the country will have to do and approve of it and get it done. Oh, no, you have the wrong idea about being president. Creating chaos all over the place. Oblivious to the chaos that he's creating. And with each irrational action causing greater and greater damage, both domestically and in the world community of nations for us, and bringing us closer and closer to a point where nobody wants to be. Every leader in this country, every leader outside of this country is flabbergasted that this man is allowed to run roughshod over things that should be approached very differently. But it means that he's not taking advice. Or whoever he's taking advice from, well, we can see where their heads are at. The war machine wants more war. You know, the 90-plus, actually it's more than 130 now, plus countries in which we have a military presence, it's not enough. We want a soldier in everybody's house all over the world. That's what we are after, and that's what he's implementing. Let's just get our superb military in control of everything everywhere. He's a darling now of the oligarchs because there's never enough money that they can make. And he has successfully proven that the country is firmly in the hands of people. They're calling the shots. They're even in his cabinet. We, the people, are a kind of necessary convenience. Nobody would be able to say, well, the United States is made up of the president and his cabinet, and that's it. And his military. He actually used that expression, my army, he says. Now, if these things don't suggest to you, well, they suggested to people like Deepak Chopra, who just a couple of weeks ago made a public plea that the president be evaluated. And he wasn't joking. This was not something to promote his thing that he has going on. He was saying that the signals this president sends is one that would alarm anyone even remotely close to expertise in specific areas. It would alarm a person. I told you that from the way up front. He is not well. He is not centered. And people like that would land you into trouble without you even having anything to do with it. So the country is going closer and closer and closer to that point in which this phrase that we say so proudly all the time, we the people, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as we the people. Unless we want it to mean something. On this day, 50 years ago, one man, stood up against the military-industrial complex, the combined forces of Congress, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. He just stood up. And he said, you guys have it wrong. I am right. And I do not mind dying for my rights, which you haven't protected. But I will not be part of your army and air force and military assault, illegal assault on the people of Vietnam. His name was Muhammad Ali. They threatened him with all kinds of stuff, loss of income. We'll snatch your belt away, your heavyweight belt. You will have to beg to make a living. He said, it's all right. I'm prepared. I'm ready. And in the end, brought this country to its knees and compelled it to act in accordance with the people's view of how this government ought to behave, especially in other people's countries. 50 years ago, all by himself. So imagine what impact we can have on a recalcitrant president and his administration. If we put our energies together and target this question. Start raising it out loud. What has happened that we are now so willing to settle for this? And if it comes to war, you know Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump are not going to be on the front lines, protecting the country. You know that. Well, I'll stop now for a minute to take a break and to take your questions. We could get a couple in before the end of the program at 888-874-4888, right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking, at least I am, about this bizarre reality, version of reality that we all seem to be living in. And we don't see very much attention being drawn to this way in which we have been forced to live. Under the brilliance of Donald Trump, President Chaos. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Idris. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Gwen?
Honey, I think you need a drink after that. It was fantastic. I'm telling you, I'm going to throw your butt on CNN. I need those words to be spoken on major networks.
Oh, my goodness.
I just loved it. I thought it was such a fantastic critique, and I had to call you and tell you that I so agree with you. I don't really have a question. I just have a comment, because I think the question keeps arising about why are the people standing back here like sheep and frightened and not doing anything and apathetic. And I think that it's that the system has so frustrated people. They get so little out of their representatives, well, as you can see. I mean, you know, they didn't really get anything out of their representatives when they all came a running for Donald Trump. And I agree with you. What did that do to his ego? Oh, my God. Now we're in a new sphere, because that just made him just bowl over. So I guess, you know, the problem is that there is, I think, even at a very, very local level, there is such fatigue, voter fatigue. People never get what they want. And so people just don't come out. I know in my district, out of 150,000 people, only 11,000 people showed up. The woman who won the city council had the lowest numbers in the history of the city council, and then became the speaker of the city council. And that's much because of political connections. It seems that the only people that can get into politics are those that already have the wheels well greased. That's not new, probably, but I think you used to have a shot. I mean, the little guy used to have a shot of getting in there somewhere. And so it's we're being herded back and forth from the Democrats to the Republicans. And what I thought was so astounding this year with the presidential election was that the refusal of the Democratic Party. I guess the one thing that was happening was everyone was in it for themselves. Like, the people that were helping Hillary were only helping Hillary because they knew if she got in, they would get a better deal for themselves. So they forgot that they were supposed to be here representing us, the people, because if you put the candidates next to each other, Bernie was clearly the one who was bringing in more votes. If you wanted to win this election, then you should have put your money on the math, and the math was on Bernie's side. So we have the, you know, total, I don't know, people are just exhausted after this. It's no one ever listens to us. But one thing that was super clear to me in watching the presidential election last year, the only thing that I kept hearing in my head was people want a change. They don't care. They don't want another dynastic Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton. They didn't want the Bushes. They wanted something to change. And they got so frustrated that they just took anything they could get, and that was Trump. I'm not making excuses for him, but I'm just saying that it's hard for me to believe that the parties were so stuck in their ways and so unwilling to hear what people wanted that they dug their heels in, and this is what we ended up with, because such a small margin of people voted. And, you know, he's not there on a popular vote. I mean, I think he probably got 25% of the vote for the United States. So he's there as a fluke, but he's there as the answer for people. They're angry because nothing ever changes, and they can't get a change. And now we have the worst change of them all, as you well described.
Thank you. I agree with you.
Thank you.
I think this idea is not to be underestimated, how deeply saddened I think people are about the state of affairs and the sense of hopelessness that even when they make an effort to make changes, there are so many impediments in their way. Thank you so much, Gwen, for your call today. Chris from New York, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Chris, you're on the air.
Oh, how are you doing, Chief?
I'm hanging in.
I'm good, thank you. And hello to the PRN listeners and staff. I think there's a delay of some kind taking place here.
Yes, I'm getting that sense, too. I don't know why. But continue. We could cope. We're tough people.
In your reference to Muhammad Ali a little while ago, I just want to say he said something that I think people should be disturbed that we don't hear everywhere. And I think in a nutshell, he was saying, I don't want to kill people. That he was at a disagreement with the notion that he should go kill people.
Yes.
And I think that simple statement gets that portion of it gets overlooked in our casual conversation, in our politics, and especially in our places of worship. I think that we're not held responsible for life anywhere. And that stance that he took kind of gets buried in our day-to-day conversation. And again, it shows up when someone like Hillary Clinton can refer, you know, can consider the death of children, you know, worth it. And
well, 550,000 children. That's Madeleine Albright, who was the Secretary of State, saying that it was worth it to incur that level of, to inflict that level of pain in Iraq, to free Iraq of Saddam Hussein.
Thank you for that correction. And also, as we hear, you know, military experts, you know, suggesting that war or military strike should be something that is extreme, overwhelming, and absolute. And I think what we're constantly hearing from one side is a rationale for genocide, like an excuse for it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a promotion of it.
I think you're getting close to the nut of it, and it's not too alarming a word to apply to the conditions on the ground that we are experiencing. I think that is where the United States has been before, and we have a full gallery urging it to return to that state again of inflicting genocide on others as a show of power to the rest of the world. Thanks so much, Chris, for your call. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
I listened to part of the program. I missed some. But the thing that goes into my mind right now is the major problem that the people in this country have, as I see it. And that problem is that no matter how much education at what level you get in the schools here or what you get in the media, you, for the most part, the masses of people here have not the ability to do a system analysis that is important to understand what's going on. It doesn't matter whether a Republican or a Democrat party is in power. The system is doing something that is designed to do, because the system is controlled by the oligarchs and people that run it. And people have to get to the point where they get the system that they live in and understand that the system does not work for them. It's not designed to work for the masses. It's designed to work for those at the top. And that's what's going on today. And those people in certain positions that are supposed to be supplying information, like quote-unquote journalists, they work for those who control the system, and they're not going to do the things that are necessary to expose the analysis of the system that people have to get in order to take the proper actions to run the country in their interests.
Absolutely. I can't disagree with anything that you've said. I think that you're right on spot with what you've said. Thanks so much, David, for calling in and contributing. And that brings us to the end of our program today. And think about these things. Let these ideas run through your head as you watch the news and you see a deliberate effort to not pay attention to these things. This is what the media should do. This is really why a strong media is so important in a civilized society to get people talking about these things. And so the plans that are being laid are not necessarily safe. You know, they will find that there's a growing opposition. Why? Because the opposition is being informed. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. It's always a great thing to listen to his programs because they really do expand your mind. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And we look forward to tomorrow. Free Your Mind Friday is on schedule. See you then. Bye-bye.